everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I'm the founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, as well as the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool called Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support that we offer families. This is a special time for our broadcast. We normally don't do Thursday nights, but I had some plans next week that now have changed. But since we were already scheduled, we're just going to kind of go ahead with this time. And we're diving into next month's topic, which we're finishing up March. March, we have been focusing on different things that you can do at home that are a little more inexpensive, not cheap, because the quality of the things that have been shared this month have been amazing, of things you can do in your homeschool for little to nothing. So if you haven't caught some of our broadcasts or podcasts in this last month, you'll want to go back and listen to those. And then as we are moving forward into April, we're going to focus on things that you can do on the go. I know when spring started to hit, and I've been homeschooling for a long time, but I remember when my kids were little, it's like, when can we get outside and do something active? So we know that you're going to want to be on the go and doing more field trips. And what can we do to learn while we're out and about? So tonight's topic is extremely great because it bridges both of those. We're going to talk about everyday things that you can do to determine therapy goals for your homeschooled student. And Kate Ponce is with us. And I'm going to pull up your website here from Thrive at Homeschool, which is thriveathomeschool.com. And so thank you for joining us and being willing to share some of the information that you have.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So if you are watching live, and I see we have some guests already joining us live, we'd love for you to be able to share this with others. Of course, if you're listening or on the recorded session or watching it too, feel free to share it also. But if you are watching live, just know that you can make comments and we will see those in the feed. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can make comments there. You're watching on Facebook, you can make comments there. If you're watching in our Facebook group, just know that you have to give permission to StreamYard to be able to post your comments up onto the public screen because that is a private group. And if you are watching on our Empowered Homeschool platform,
I started kindergarten in the public school system and then was homeschooled from first grade through 12th grade.
Awesome.
So then I ended up getting a degree in apparel design. I wasn't sure what I wanted to study college-wise. Wow. I'd looked at healthcare, kind of decided against it. Mm-hmm. After I finished in apparel, I ended up going into occupational therapy, which was a really neat fit for me.
Really?
I got to use that creative
side
I had from apparel. So I studied occupational therapy. And then I had initially worked mostly with adults. I kind of was interested in pediatrics, but you request your clinicals and then you get what you get kind of deal. So I ended up getting clinicals with adults and my first couple of jobs were with adults. Hmm. But then once we started having kids of our own, my husband and I kind of started branching out a little bit more towards some kind of the pediatric side of things again, picking it up, refreshing what I'd learned in school and really applying that at home, both with my own kids and then just answering questions, you know, that friends would bring up and things.
Right. Yeah.
So now we have two daughters and we're expecting our third son this summer.
Aww.
And so we're getting started and enjoying starting homeschooling with the girls.
Yeah.
Especially the oldest. We've been doing preschool now for a couple of years. And I'm enjoying getting to get back into homeschooling after, you know, the break from my own college.
Right. Yeah.
Back into homeschool. So
That's awesome. Yeah, it's amazing the amount of people that are just starting out homeschooling from the get-go with the youngers. You have a lot of companions out there.
Yes.
I've talked to a lot of them at homeschool conferences and parents just who have decided from the beginning, this is what we're going to do. It's a whole new generation. And again, as a homeschooled student yourself, we're seeing that as well.
Yes. And I got the neat opportunity before I applied to OT school, we had to get clinical experience and experience working with different ages.
Oh,
so I was working with older adults in an adult day program, but I ended up picking up a job at the school system as a special ed aide to kind of get that pediatric side
right. That
I needed to apply to school. And I had wanted to homeschool before, but then going into the classroom and being in there and seeing just the limitations that it puts on the education when you have a whole classroom you're trying to teach
right.
at once.
Yeah.
Kind of just reinforced for me, at least, the benefits of homeschooling when you have that opportunity.
Right. You hear that so much from so many teachers. I have friends in special ed and they are so tired and they try so hard. And kudos to them that for doing that, but it is a very restricted system. And
it is
so
challenging.
So yeah, very challenging. And so I just want to commend all you parents. You know, you feel like it's difficult, but you really are providing an environment for your student to learn and to grow that is less restrictive at home, no matter how hard it seems. I know it sometimes seems really hard a lot of days. We just want to encourage you, and that's why we're here. So yeah, and I hope what Kate has to share is going to just continue to encourage you in that area. So as we're getting started in this, you know, in these real life everyday experiences, what are some advantages of learning in that context in relation to like our schedule and in homeschooling in general?
Well, a big benefit that we find, at least, and I found growing up, is it does give you a lot more flexibility in the schedule. You don't have to necessarily be at home if you want to go visit grandparents, if you wanted to work in field trips and things so that you're not on the field trip when everyone else is. So it's
crowded. Right. I used to call ahead of time and say, is there a group coming today? Because I'm not coming if they are.
And I don't know, with as many new people homeschooling, that may not be the case anymore.
Right, exactly.
When we were younger growing up, you know, you could go and you could get to times that weren't as busy. You could go to the beach in the off season and kind of gain that experience. So when you have these activities where you're kind of teaching kids on the go, that's the biggest benefit I find, is that it gives you that flexibility. And you're not always just toting the books with you everywhere. You can be selective about what books you may want to take and then just work in those learning activities as you go into your schedule.
Yeah. I never, you know, that's a good thing to point out, is that, you know, we can pick and choose what's going to happen that day. And we don't have to like bring the whole tote with us.
Right. Yes. And you can learn while you're going to the grocery store. You can learn while you're running some of those errands as well, which then also will free you up on weekends to do more family things rather than having some of those more chore based kind of.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned learning in the grocery store. I think we have a broadcast coming up and the whole hour is going to be talking about how to learn in the grocery store. So that's going to be interesting.
There are so many different things you can learn and do. And when you realize, we had run into with my daughter, the oldest one, she didn't remember like before COVID, obviously, because she was very young. And the first time we started taking her into a store again, as things started settling back down, and she was just like, oh my goodness, look at all this stuff. And I said, well, it's the store. You have to bring your money. So then the next time she had to go find like money and take it with her because she wanted to understand how this new place works.
Right.
For her, just all those learning things and stimulating environment.
Right. I never even thought about that. That discovery mode that our kids are in when we take them new places. Can you talk a little bit more about that as to how to maybe as a parent kind of use that to our advantage about helping kids be more curious?
Well, I think sometimes, a lot of times, it's just exposing them to different environments, different. And like I said, it doesn't necessarily have to be an expensive environment for her, having been at home. It was just stopping in. And I think it was the first time was even stopping into a gas station on the way to the beach just to go to the bathroom. And realizing, and then realizing, okay, now I can show you, you know, this is the flower we have at home, but look, here's different kinds of flowers, and you can teach her about the different kinds of flowers. She loves to cook, you know, so we, here's different options you can get, different options you can purchase. And then as she gets older, of course, teaching her how to compare prices and why you might pick this one over that one. She's already gotten pickier now going to the grocery store with me on which foods, like she doesn't like her cheese with the orange in it.
Okay.
White cheddar cheese. And now that we're back in the grocery store and she sees that it's orange, she's like, nope, that's not the one we get, you know. Teaching her all of those kinds of things.
Right. Yeah.
And I think a lot of times it's like the attitude that you have as a parent when you go through.
Yeah.
So if I go through kind of stressed and, oh no, here's what we need to get. Whereas if I go through when it's maybe not as crowded, when we can kind of relax, take our time, we're not going to be hungry, and then point out things to her and be like, oh, look at this. Do you know what this is? And can really teach her along the way that kind of models that sense of wonder.
Then
again, that same thing that you can then apply when you go to other more exciting, as we would say, field trips like the zoo and those kinds of things. We've been talking about going to the zoo with the girls and telling them, getting them pumped up and being like, okay, well, when we go to the zoo, these are the animals you're going to see. You know how you've read about this animal. We may see that at the zoo. Let's read a little more about the animal so that you know what to expect.
Yeah. And so you've kind of answered some of those preliminary questions. You've got other questions that are now starting to formulate in their head.
Exactly.
And for like our kids on the spectrum, those are almost like social stories already preparing them for that place.
Exactly. And, so that's another thing. So, and we've run into that, you know, with our oldest, she can get really nervous sometimes in different settings. So we've noticed if you do prepare her, and it's the same thing, like you said, as you would with a child who maybe has autism or has anxiety of any sort, you kind of just prepare them for what to expect. Here's what this is going to be like. And then that helps them be more prepared so they're not shocked and thrown off by the new environment that you're
And I want to bring up too something you said a little while ago too about making time and making sure you're not rushed. I think that's something some of us homeschool parents, you know, we want to fit in as much as we can, and that can really rob our children and us of learning discoveries. And I love that you pointed that out.
It can, and especially too if you're working with someone who maybe is thrown off by the new environment. If you're then pushed into a situation and you're like, rush, 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 then you've further compounded that anxiety that that they've been thrown off on and made it even worse because you're now saying, not only am I not going to stop and take you out of the situation, I'm not even going to give you the time to process the situation before we move on.
And our kids sometimes have really long processing or, you know, slow processing speeds and just allowing that immersion to happen.
Yes.
All great points. Love it. Absolutely. So what about as far as learning outcomes, the advantages of being in these like everyday immersive environments?
Well, there's several that are particularly beneficial. First off, one of the things that I'll just touch on really briefly is sometimes if you have a child who's maybe reluctant to learning something or reluctant to a particular subject, putting it in this real life situation can make it much more appealing.
Yeah.
It's going to show the child it's more applicable, but also it's going to be feel like, I mean, mm-hmm. you can even teach with a game. So that will help you teach that skill, kind of mm-hmm. move past that roadblock without the frustration of, I'm not enjoying this. I'm not wanting to learn this. Except right. that you may be
exactly.
facing.
The shutdown's already happened and we're we're beating exactly. a dead horse.
Right. And so that is one thing. And it also, it's like changing the environment. It's changing everything. You're no longer sitting where you usually sit when you do your school books. Mm-hmm. You've changed that environment as well, which can kind of give a fresh perspective sometimes and for the kids and help them kind of reset.
Yes, that's a good point.
But the other thing I think that it really helps with the parents is it helps you to really view whether the child is truly understanding what you're teaching. So if you're teaching and you kind of, if you really pay attention and you, as you interact with other people, you can tell when somebody really doesn't understand what they're talking about. They're just repeating something they've been told and they haven't actually processed it. They don't fully understand it themselves.
Right.
And I remember that was a big shock when I got to college and when I got to even professors, and you'd ask a question and you realize they didn't know how to answer the question because they've never actually thought about this. And they're a professor in this, you know, they have a PhD. But
right. But they've studied the books and they know how to rehash the book answers.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so when you put it then in this real life situation, you're forcing your students to kind of process and apply to a slightly different situation, a different context. And it's also not going to be a context that incorporates, like, it's probably not going to be exclusively math or exclusively science because the real world isn't exclusively something.
Right.
So that also helps you to kind of see if they're able to apply across these different disciplines, these different subject areas, and really integrate what they've learned. So that is helpful from a parent perspective because it lets you, the same thing we see as a therapist, you know, when I'm working with a patient, seeing if they can really understand and apply that movement pattern or that exercise once you've removed the context they've been practicing in.
Yes. It's good to practice and to equip your student with all of that in an ideal environment. But at some point, we have to apply it, like you said, and it's not an ideal environment. And how does our student do? And so, that makes perfect sense. But as a parent, to be mindful that that's what we're watching for, instead of going, well, we're just going to go somewhere and enjoy ourselves. But taking that step back. And do you have any advice on how to mentally do that as a parent?
So the biggest thing I think is, again, kind of like we touched on a little bit earlier, but giving yourself enough time. So letting yourself have enough cushion in the day that if you're seeing, oh, maybe they're not really grasping this subject we're discussing, or maybe they're really into this subject and we want to take it further, or whatever, that you can just set the books aside and go down and do an activity just right then and there, kind of a spontaneous activity. But you have to allow yourself enough cushion within your schedule in order to be able to do that. So that's one thing. The other tip that I really would have is just kind of look ahead and kind of plan ahead. So if you have a season coming up and you, for example, really wanted to focus on one thing we've tried for a couple of years now, we're still learning, is tapping our maple tree in the backyard. The girls, you know, we've taken them up to the maple festival and let them see, you know, at the maple festival, the buckets with the sap and getting boiled down, but actually really experiencing it in the backyard by tapping the tree, and they get to go out and they watch the sap just drip into the bucket slowly and realizing how long it takes.
Yes.
Really appreciating then your maple syrup that you get. but it requires me to plan ahead because you start tapping the tree in January. You've just had Christmas. You're getting
right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to kind of be prepared and be planned ahead. Plan ahead because we have tapped the tree far too late, and then you don't get as good of a result.
Right.
So keeping that in mind, the year as a whole, and then each week or each month, as far as what you're going to be studying and what activities you could incorporate, or what field trips may be fun to incorporate. Yeah. And then even day to day, like if you know that the next day you want to do a field trip, then doubling up on some of those other subjects to kind of get them done so you're free to have the day to really do your field trip.
Right. Instead of
cram in math,
rush home and, or yeah, before we leave and then after we get home. And
exactly. Because then you're A, not going to enjoy math.
Right.
But B, you're going to be rushed going into that field trip as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it really is. It's such a, I mean, when I look back at the years of homeschooling with my kids remember those days. They don't remember the days, you know, that we spent at the kitchen table doing all the workbooks and stuff. It's those days. And and you want those memories to be good. And so preparing for that is so important. And, you know, it, like you said, the time. And I wish I would have spent more time. I mean, I can look back and say lots of things. But moving forward to all of you that are listening, make the time. Listen to Kate. Oh, that's really good advice. Yep. Awesome. So do you have any tips that would help parents be more mindful to take time away from books and use more practical everyday experiences?
I think it kind of is going to depend on your teaching style and how you, and for each individual parent as to what works really well for you. Yeah. I tend to do really well with routines personally. So if I can kind of get in a routine, for example, at the age that the girls are right now, I can teach them a lot when we're doing a cooking activity, but I don't necessarily want to involve them in dinner prep because they've usually got raw meat and everything.
Right. So and you are on a time schedule usually and a lot of other things. Yes.
So we will do breakfast. And so I get up, I do whatever chores I don't want them involved in, like emails or anything that makes it more difficult with them around. Mm-hmm. And then once they wake up, it's not every day of the week, but several days of the week, we'll do a very simple breakfast bread that we'll do like a muffin or scone. Mm-hmm. And that gives us the chance to talk about measurements, to count. As you know, as we're measuring the different cups, but then also talk about the differences in the measurements.
Right.
And then, you know, biscuits are circles, scones are triangles. You can go into fractions when you cut the scones. We've kind of been introducing that side of things. Not to mention that you're teaching them patience because you can't pull it straight out of the oven right after you put it in.
Yep.
All those important, like, fundamental skills as well.
Exactly.
That you're focusing on. And so that's a good way that we kind of work it into our routine. And then another way is we like to plan either right before lunch or right after lunch, weather permitting, we'll go on a walk and just put it on our schedule that that is something we will do that gives them the exercise, the stimulation. We look for acorns in the fall. We look for flowers in the spring. Yeah. You know, we're looking for wildlife, animals. The other day, we were even finding sticks that were shaped like different letters while we were on our walk.
Wow, that is very creative. So,
just fun things that you find as you're, you know, as you're walking and, but you have to make the time again.
Right.
And
yes.
And like I said, for me, it's easier to put it into the routine and that helps me to make the time, but you know, what works best for other parents, maybe different approach.
But I think it does help our kids too, when they know what's coming And I know with my kids on the spectrum, that was important because they just expected that, you know, the schedule was the schedule. And, you know, we always had it up on a blackboard. And if you have that prepared, they're going to be more apt to be involved in that and go, yeah, that's what we're doing versus, no, I don't want to do that. But if it becomes a routine, you know, all of a sudden I said, when is it going to happen that my kids are just going to get up and grab their books and sit at the table? And it did happen. But it took about maybe 2 to 3 years for them to say, oh, this is what we do.
Exactly. And routines, like when you think about it, even going through like sleep, when you stick to a consistent routine, that's like throughout the lifespan, even older adults, really? You know, when I work with older adults, if you're inconsistent in your sleep, it's going to throw off your whole day. But if you get that sleep down consistently, which then makes for a consistent wake up time. Mm-hmm. And then from there, your day follows that consistent routine. You will feel better and you will function better and be less prone to the irritations that everyone gets, you know, when we're tired or when we're thrown off.
Right.
Sleep, which can especially help, you know, if you've already got a child who's struggling in some areas, keeping that sleep at least consistent will help.
Yes.
And then, like you said, that can then lead through the whole rest of the day being.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that there isn't something that would come up, but over time, we've been better at keeping that schedule than it being all over the place. And it does add up. And that is very true.
But you are right. There are days that the routine is totally
out the window. It just happens. Yeah. That's why you write everything in pencil in your planner.
Exactly. You can always read 2 chapters of this book tomorrow.
Exactly. Yes. It
doesn't have to be today.
Yeah. So true. Yep. Mm-hmm. So can you share some examples with us of how to incorporate everyday learning into our homeschooling schedules and maybe how those activities may be helpful in determining therapy goals for our students?
So I'll touch on the learning part of that first.
Yeah.
Some of the activities, like for example, we were reading a book the other day and we're learning about physics and we're learning about pulleys and wheels and machines. And
yeah,
you know, it was actually the second time we read it because she went back and my daughter went back, pulled it off the shelf and said, let's reread this one after we'd already finished, you know, the day's science.
Well, you listen a couple broadcasts back and we were talking about reading comprehension. She actually says to do that. So
they get more out of it.
They get more out of it. Yes. Exactly. So it drives us crazy as parents. But
by the time you have read this story, you know, some of these stories like 10 times, they know it by heart.
Well, they do. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You ask them the first time and they're like, huh, I don't have a clue what we just read.
Right. Exactly.
But yes. So when we finished reading the book again, the second time, and I realized, you know, she was starting to get it a little more. She was starting to understand it a little better. And I said, well, let's go. You know, your sister's asleep. Let's go down and have some fun. And we went down. My husband has a gym in the basement. Mm-hmm. We went down and we got out some of his gym equipment. And so I'd be like, okay, here, try to lift this weight right now. You feel how heavy it is. Now let's put it over here on the wagon and see how it's easier to pull in the wagon versus pulling on the sled, or how it's easier to, you know, lift it with the pulley system versus just lifting it on your own. And really helping that kind of sink in. So a lot of times it's really where looking at what interests your kids or what challenges your kids and kind of making an activity out of it.
Right.
So you can go outside. We were watching honeybees one day outside flying from flower to flower. Went inside, made an art picture. We punched out little pollen circles with the hole punch, you know, and glued some on the bee, glued some on the flower, drew out a diagram of the parts of the flower, you know, based on the flower we used as our model.
Right.
And a whole like hands-on fun activity that we built out of just this observation we had outside.
Right. Yeah.
To really help. It go from, you know, we talked about the flower outside, but then once we drew and labeled all the parts, then it really started to sink in what the parts were. And then, of course, we hang it up on the wall and you can go look at it all the time.
Exactly. That's such a great, yeah, I always say when I give a talk on creative homeschooling and putting things on your walls, because you don't realize how many times your children walk past that picture. And every time they walk past it, they look at it. And they remember that lesson over and over and over again. And it's amazing how much they remember when you do that.
We made, going off of that, a little bit of a sidetrack, but we made a quilt, which the girls helped a tiny bit. Mostly it was me, but a quilt of the state of Virginia, because we live in Virginia, and we put each county is a different color. And well, some of them are the same color, but, you know, so that it's a quilt of the different counties. Right. And then put blocks around the outside. And as we go to a state park, they can put the state park patch in the block. Oh, and then they have the state map in the middle. Mm-hmm. And it has sparked this fascination with maps. Mm. And now my daughter, she'll flip open anything. Like, she'll flip open a magazine and they'll have a map. And she'll ask, where is this, you know, where do I live on this map? You know, and having to talk to her. And explain to her. My dad was laughing because she flipped open her Bible and Sunday in church and she goes, "Grandpa, where do I live on this map?" And he said, "Oh, well, you're not on that map. That's, that map is where Jesus lived." She goes, "Oh, this is a map of heaven?" And he's like, "No, no." And we had to explain, go home with a world map, show her this is where Jesus lived when he walked on earth.
Right.
Not a map of heaven.
Oh, that's great, though.
But really, you know, it's kind of just from her just walking by and seeing it, like you mentioned, just kind of sparked this fascination. But yeah, so that's so those were a few of the ideas. For some of the older kids, sometimes incorporating things like my dad, when we were growing up, my brothers, one time learning about engines, kind of interested in physics and engines.
Right.
So he took the old lawnmower, was broken. He said, "Well, come on, let's take it apart together and see if we can fix it." Which really applied a lot of the stuff they were learning. One of the brothers, I think he ended up even making a 4-H presentation about the project, you know, presenting what he had learned. But just a fabulous experience that they really could apply. Some of those principles. And then I know you and I were talking briefly before about soap making, but we tried making soap a few years ago, and the first time it was a disaster. It didn't set up. And we went back and, like, looked at the chemistry and realized, you know, we were confusing, like, fluid ounces with weight ounces when we were putting in the liquid. You know, we went.
That's a learning experience.
But again, pull out the chemistry book, go back through. One of my brothers is a chemist, so we had to help us out. And he's like, "What do you mean you confused it? Why would it change the, you know, from weight ounces to fluid ounces in the same recipe?" And we're like, "Well, I don't know. We didn't think about it."
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But just, you know, applying those kinds of those principles you're learning and really putting them in. And I mean, you get your soap proportions off and you have a disaster.
Right. Yeah. So, but it's a learning experience
experience while a disaster. Yes. Exactly.
Yes. You just have a lot of liquid soap.
So again, like I said, just looking at what your kids enjoy, looking at what kinds of things you're studying, and just how can you make this hands-on? How can you work this into an activity and kind of be a little bit spontaneous with it?
Right. Yeah. You know? And just looking around your environment where you're at. I mean, a lot of the things I'm hearing you describe, you know, it's just, it's in the house, it's in the backyard, it's in the basement. We don't have to go far. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be something that's going to cost a bunch of money. It doesn't have to be a fancy kit. You can just do it at home with what you've got.
So, and I know I always saw myself as not being extremely creative. I don't know if you see yourself as creative. You kind of seem like you're more creative than I am. But I learned over time that as I gave myself grace, that I found things that I could be creative with because I'm an engineer by training. And so, you know, things just needed to be laid out for me. And as I kind of just kind of let loose a little bit, my kids caused that to happen, that you find things. And I think it goes back to what you were talking about at the very beginning about that time, allowing yourself the time, because when you take the step back and you start looking, when you're not rushed, you will see those opportunities.
And there are so many of them.
Yes. Yeah.
So then touching then on the therapy side of things. So a lot of times when you kind of following that same mindset, but when you look at what is involved in an activity, so say your child is struggling with handwriting and you're not really sure how to help them, you're not really sure where to intervene. If you really look at that handwriting and kind of break the task down, and you know that handwriting has multiple components, and you can kind of learn and read up on each one. It could be the fine motor, it could be the gross motor, it could be some cognitive, it could be some visual. Kind of figure out what the challenge is. You can then observe other activities that maybe have those same components. So for example, say that your child, you're thinking, oh, it's probably fine motor, but then you observe them performing another a totally different fine motor task with no trouble at all. You know, you just because you thought
then
it was
cross that motor, one off the list.
Cross that one off the list, you know.
Right.
And so that's one way we're observing in this environment, and in this natural environment helps you kind of weed out and cross off what isn't actually the problem, or identify what is, and then you can incorporate activities that maybe the handwriting has kind of, like I said earlier, you know, when something becomes a challenge and you don't really want to do it anymore. Maybe handwriting has become that. You don't even want to do handwriting anymore, but you've identified what the challenge is with handwriting, and you address that challenge in a new and totally different and unrelated way.
Right. Yeah. It could be posture. And so then, you know, you're working on like large motor body types of things.
Exactly. And you're working on posture in a totally unrelated to handwriting activity. That will then give you the opportunity, kind of give you that in to then take it back and then address the handwriting later. I don't know. I think the perfect example on this, she was an older patient, but I had a lady in a nursing home one time and she did not want to do the exercises, but she was weaker and she didn't, you know, she really needed to do exercise. So I said, well, you know, you made it all the way down here to the clinic or to the gym space, so let's just go ahead and can you just help me put away these canned goods? Well, I knew that the canned goods weighed about the same amount as the weight she absolutely refused to use. But she was agreeable to putting those canned goods up and lifting them up and putting them in the cabinet, and she got in the exercise without doing exercise,
right?
Which was more enjoyable to her. So using that same mindset, like I said, when you work with your students,
right?
Once you've identified,
like making things a game, and so they don't see it as this is just a repetitive motion I'm doing over and over again. And like you were drawing on that woman's probably desire to be helpful. It's those internal motivators that we have to figure out what drives our kids and drives us. That's why a lot of people fail at exercising, because it's not fun. If you don't find something that you like, you're going to give up on it. And so are your kids.
And the same with sometimes with those lessons, you know, if it's not clicking, find a different way. And I guess, too, this is kind of something we started on earlier, but going back to that, as far as how to work in activities, sometimes if you're kind of reached that barrier, like reached that block, and you look ahead at the lesson, you read it, you figure out what the goal of that lesson is, don't even use the worksheet. If it's math or whatever, just use that to design your activity that you're going to do. Just put a note on the page that says, we did this activity verbally, orally, you know, however you want to phrase it, or did it with an activity. And so that you know you're done and you don't accidentally go back to it later. But do that and move on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. You don't have to go back and do the worksheet as well.
Exactly.
So Kate just gave you permission to do that. So yes. Yeah. That's hard for those box checkers who say, I've got to get everything done. But you don't. And your kids will see that as something fun, and they're less likely to fight it. And again, you're going back to what you were talking about kind of at the very beginning, was that in the natural environment, it isn't just this, perfect setup. We're going to see a lot of other things come out that then you can determine, is this really the issue that this student is having?
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's some really good advice about all of that. All right. So how can parents ensure that they're challenging their students so activities aren't busy work, but also aren't so challenging that they deter their kids from wanting to do anything at all? It's like, oh, no, we're going outside again. Mom's got something crazy planned.
Yes. Well, again, in this situation, it involves looking at the activity itself and really kind of analyzing what is involved in this activity I have planned, and will my kids be able to perform that activity at that level? Right. And then also looking at then what you're trying to teach them. So is this really the next level, the next point at what I want to teach them? Or maybe is this a little bit too challenging or not challenging enough?
Mm-hmm.
So going back to, we mentioned the grocery store example before, but
it sounds
overwhelming, but you do this a lot on a daily basis when you think about it. If you're going to take your kids to the grocery store and say you have a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, an 18-month-old, you're going to automatically realize, well, the 18-month-old takes a nap at whatever time. So if we don't give ourselves enough time before nap, we're going to have a meltdown or whatever in the grocery store.
So there's planning there, yes.
So you're going to already modify the activity in a sense to accommodate for that nap schedule.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you're also, your 18-month-old probably isn't going to walk through the grocery store. So you're going to modify and make sure you get a cart that you can put the 18-month-old in so they can ride, which is going to help them to get through the store. So you've now modified this grocery shopping task to let all three children participate.
Yeah.
But when you then put in that learning side of things, you're going to, as you go through the store, maybe you're working on colors with your youngest one. So you'll point out things that are different colors as you go through the grocery store.
Right.
You're not going to ask your 6-year-old, tell me what color that is.
Right.
Because in most cases, your 6-year-old is probably well past that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can then ask your 6-year-old, can you tell me what the price of that object is? Or what that item, and or can you tell me, is this item more expensive or less expensive than that item? And kind of let them, because that's what they're working on.
Right.
And then your middle kid, if you said, maybe about 4 years old or whatever, then you can maybe have them read the numbers to you. They're not going to understand it's $1.33, but they'll be able to say it's a 1, it's a 3, it's a 3.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of help them understand. And so you've kind of incorporated all of the kids in the same activity, but yet they're each being challenged in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And you've kind of modified the activity a little bit to kind of tweak what you were wanting to work on with each child.
Definitely. Yes. And they're not competing with each other because they each have their own goals, which is important when you have especially competitive children.
Because if you just went in and said, who can tell me what color this is? You're probably going to have everybody piping in except the one you want telling you what color.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be way too easy for those older ones.
Right. Yeah.
And it's turned into the busy work, for them.
Yes, exactly. And it's too challenging giving the price for the 18-month-old.
Exactly. Even the 4-year-old maybe can't tell you what that price is.
But it's amazing when you do that in a group, though. that those youngers start learning from what the older ones say.
Exactly.
So beware.
We've been laughing about that with our youngest right now, just how much she's counting, how high she's counting. She has no clue what she's really saying, but she will sit there and count all her numbers because she's repeating.
Yeah.
So, and it's just from hearing older sister.
Mm-hmm. So where were you at in the family as far as the homeschool kids?
I was the oldest.
Okay.
And then I had two younger brothers. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get that side of things.
Right. They caught from you. Yeah.
they joke about it because I picked Latin as my foreign language when I reached high school. And then mom told the boys, well, we already bought Latin, so you can learn Latin. And they were not pretty. Well, the one closer in age to me, he was okay with it. But the youngest one was like, I have to study Latin.
Yeah, and it's your fault.
All your fault. So mom did let him purchase a Spanish curriculum after he finished the Latin. He could start learning Spanish because he felt that was more practical.
Yes. Yeah. All my kids started learning Chinese because my middle one had a speech issue and he couldn't say his R's, and they don't say R in Chinese. So I was like, okay, well, we're learning Mandarin then. And the other two were like, not really. it lasted as long as it lasted. So yeah, you make those accommodations and yes, those little ones, they're the tag alongs. They just kind of learn as they come along.
Yes, that is very true.
Yeah. So Creative Minds Homeschooling made a comment. She goes, your night lives are so much easier to make. I'm not trying to teach school. I know it's difficult on my schedule. And actually we have more interaction during the day. So I'm sorry that we've switched to afternoons. But at least you can catch the replays. But every once in a while, we'll try to get an evening in here and there. So thank you for that comment and for being on with us. Yeah. So as we're wrapping up, I would love for you to tell our viewers where they can connect with you and about some of the services that you offer homeschooling families.
Okay. Yes, well, I am an occupational therapist. We live in Virginia, so I am licensed in Virginia. Mm-hmm. So for anyone who lives in Virginia who wants occupational therapy services, they can reach out on the websites at the bottom of your screen there.
Yep, thriveathomeschool.com.
And then from there, it will kind of link to the clinical side of the website where you could inquire about occupational therapy services, kind of give some more details. We do take a little bit different approach. My husband's a PT. I'm an OT. To therapy, a lot of times the way we like to think about it is what you're doing in the moment, like with therapy in these few hours you have with therapy isn't going to make as much of an impact as what you're doing all of the other hours in your day.
Exactly.
So we do try to, like, when you do therapy with us, it's not like you're necessarily going to see us a ton. We're going to try to check in with you, give you ideas to try, and then check in and see how those ideas went versus just like piano lessons, clock in once a week and we'll do your therapy kind of deal.
Right. Yes.
It is a little bit of a different approach to that. It is a lot more parent involved. So that does mean...
Which most homeschool parents enjoy. And like you said, again, it is more effective because it's a consistent therapy that's being applied with the student.
It makes the changes to the actual day and to your actual routine, which is going to make more of an impact. And then for anyone living outside Virginia, I do put different homeschool ideas on the website or on the Facebook page and Instagram page to kind of just give just different things. Like a couple weeks ago with the girls, we were sewing together and just all the skills some of the skills that they were picking up on learning as we were sewing, kind of just to get you thinking about your daily activities, thinking about how to make activities out of these things you already do and how to really make the most impact for your kids. So yeah. Share some ideas there, and then some articles and stuff that I will write on the website as well. Just basic homeschool questions that I hear people ask, you know, all the time.
Right.
Just from experience, you know, what has worked as far as everything. I mean, it ranges records, occupational therapy, like all kinds of different things to consider, you know, when you're homeschooling.
Right.
So that is all available on the website as well.
Awesome. And again, that's thriveathomeschool.com if you're listening to the podcast, or you can't see the screen if you're in another room and you're listening to us as we're chatting. That sometimes happens, I know. But Kate has some great information on her website, and it's awesome that you can help parents. I know that we've heard over and over again from parents who have moved from using a school model where they don't even interact with the therapist. They don't know what their child is doing in therapy, and the therapist doesn't even talk to them because they don't have enough time to work with the parent as well as the child. And yet the crossover that we see and the improvement of parents working in tandem with therapy providers is leaps and bounds in progress.
And then another thing too that I think a lot of people don't realize is that the school model the education model is a different model from what you would get if you got therapy in the community, which would be under the medical model. And both of those are going to be strongly influenced by who is paying the bill. So in the school model, the school is paying the bill. If they can't directly tie it to school performance, it doesn't matter if it's a struggle for your child. You're not going to address it. And then the medical model, insurance will set the limit. So that is one thing. We did end up going with a cash-based model. So, you know, so you pay us directly for the therapy. Then if you wish to submit to insurance for reimbursement, that isn't fine. You know, parents can do that. But, you know, you'd have to work with insurance and see what would be covered. But that puts you in control over.
That is so important to point out. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're not limited by what is insurance saying or what is the school system saying.
Right. A lot of people don't realize the school is so dictated by the policy and the money. And that's all they can offer. And it's so sad that some kids will hit a plateau point, or they'll finally get past that one thing and they'll say, okay, therapy's done. Even though your child really does need more therapy, but then they wait till they fall behind again, and then therapy starts again. And it's just this constant back and forth and up and down, and kids get, it's a yo-yo system that it's like, well, you're not bad enough off, so we're just going to let you float.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it definitely isn't the best. And then also the other factor that it influences is you're trying to keep that child integrated into a classroom in the school setting, which is going to change because you're going to do what is like your goals and everything have to approach. How can this child stay in the classroom versus how can this child achieve this goal or learn this? It's not that you're not trying to achieve the goal, but you know what I'm getting at here.
You still have to. You want their environment to stay the
least restrictive environment factor is so key that may or may not be truly what this particular child needs.
Right.
And it's something where in the homeschool you can really make that customized environment.
And you've shared some great examples this last hour. If you're just joining us right now, you've got to go back and watch as soon as the replay pops up, because Kate shared a lot of really great ideas on how to do everyday things, talk about learning goals, and just helping determine what your child specifically needs based on just some stuff you do around the house. So thank you, Kate, for all that you've shared in this last hour. It has been really, really helpful. And I know our viewers are going to really enjoy it. And listeners on the podcast, that we have a lot of people that just download and they say, I plug you in my ear every week.
Great.
That's awesome. And so make sure you do check out Kate's website. It's thriveathomeschool.com. And like she said, it's just a a mix of a whole bunch of things that she's doing, and just some of her expertise as a therapist mixed in with that. And if you live in Virginia, definitely see if she has some services that you could use. So that's awesome. And I want to thank our viewers. We've had quite a few popping in and out. I've seen you on my little counter up there. I'm kind of quiet tonight, but I know we've kind of bridged the gap of dinner time and bedtime. So thank you for being here with us as we have just had this chat and for being part of our community. And also just want you to know that this broadcast is sponsored by viewers like you. SPED Homeschool is a 501c3 nonprofit, and you can make a tax-deductible donation to us. Just visit our website at spedhomeschool.com. And that's not the only thing we have there. We have lots of resources for you, too, as well. You can click on the Get Homeschool Help there. You can find our podcast on there and how to kind of tap into our community. Our blog is rated the number one special needs homeschooling blog. And so there's lots of great articles on there written by our partners. Actually, this last month, they've all been written by me, but they're just free resources from all of our partners. I went and dug through all their websites and gave you all the free links. So you definitely want to go through some of those blogs and find that. And also, I want to let you know that registrations have opened for our summer camp. We are having a family camp for the first time in partnership with the Ministry of Johnny and Friends, and it's going to be in Stuartville, Minnesota. And so if you are interested in that, you can fill out an application. There's no payment due at the time of application. You can just say, I'm interested. I want to go. And we're also looking for volunteers because we are going to provide a buddy for every child that comes. And so we are excited to be able to give parents respite and to refresh and renew you, do horseback riding and have a chuck wagon dinner, a date night for parents. Just a lot of things we're going to have for you that we know as homeschool parents who are affected by disability that you could use. And hopefully that will continue and we'll be moving into other states starting next year. So that's all on our website. You can check it out at spedhomeschool.com. And again, check out Kate's website at thriveathomeschool.com. And then we are taking next week off. I had a surgery scheduled that's now been canceled, which is fine. I was elective and I've decided just to not go through with it. And so I'm feeling at peace with that, but I have next week off for some reason. So God willing, that will all be fine. And then we'll be back the week after. And like I said, we're talking about on the go type homeschooling things. And what we're going to talk about when we get back is activity-based learning in high school, which oftentimes we don't talk about. High school seems like that book thing, but we're going to talk about getting outside the box and the books for high school and how you can make high school more activity-based. So you want to join us then. So thanks everybody for joining us. Thanks again, Kate. It was wonderful having you on, and I just appreciate you and taking some time to share with us tonight. So we'll see you all in about a week and a half. And so have a good night. Bye, everybody.